is The Hot Zone. Engaging with the news in a whole new way, international war correspondent Chuck Holton brings insight into areas of crisis and lets you help those affected.
But of course they're not going to do that, and because of the desire of the U.S. government to get these migrants into the United States. And there's a great desire, and it has a lot more to do with, I mean, yes, they would love to make these people Democratic voters. It's a way that the government is sort of electing itself a new people. But the bigger issue right now is apportionment. And that is these sanctuary cities that welcome these migrants in, and they get apportioned Congress people by the number of bodies they have in their districts. And so if they can get more people into their districts, and their Democratic districts already, that means more Democratic Congress people. And from this last census, they're talking about 4 seats flipping from Republican to Democrat because of the apportionment issue. This is something that's been going on for a long, long time, and they're going to keep doing it until they have a bulletproof majority in the government.
And then they'll have a country that goes into civil war. I mean, because
Talk about that. You've been up in Seattle, Portland, D.C. You've been covering a lot of the conflict that's been taking place in the United States. Obviously, these migrants have no idea the violence that they're stepping into if they do make it to the U.S. Many of them, if they did, might stay in Panama because it's a heck of a lot safer here than it is in Baltimore or Seattle or Portland, or we could go on and on and on. You say that we are in the beginning stages of another civil war. Tell me why.
That's quite clear. For instance, well, first of all, I've been in a lot of wars. For instance, I spent a year in Nepal. They had a tremendous civil war. Maoist won, if you call that winning. I've seen Philippines, Thailand, so many places, Iraq, Afghanistan. Just got kicked out of Hong Kong, you know. When you know what you're looking for, it's like a doctor walking into a room and smelling cancer. I mean, it's quite obvious, actually. When the conditions are set, when the forest is dry, any spark will do. And a spark is coming, right? So it's just a matter of the forest. Some of the things that I look for, for instance, let's roll back to Afghanistan. Why was I so far in advance of saying that Afghanistan, we were losing Afghanistan? I started publishing that in 2006 in 12 major dispatches. Why? I left Iraq, I went into Afghanistan, and I started asking British and American intelligence, how's your human doing? How's your human intelligence doing? And I'm not asking what it is, I'm just asking what are the trends? Are you getting more or are you getting less? If you're getting more human intelligence, that's a very good sign, unless you're upping your capacity. But I mean, adjusting for everything, are people voluntarily giving you more or less intelligence? And they're like, plummeting. Okay, that means blood pressure is dropping here in a unconventional warfare environment. Likewise, that was Afghanistan. Go back to Iraq in 2007 when I was back there in the middle of the surge and all that. I saw a human skyrocket. That was a sign that we were starting to whip up on them, right? Mm-hmm. And that and many other things. I'm putting this in a nutshell. Mm-hmm. But there are certain things I look for when I go in, and one of them is your human. Another is the sense of credibility of the government. Does the government have legitimacy, or do they see it as illegitimate? Mm-hmm. Now, there's increasing numbers of Americans that clearly see the government as illegitimate. Mm-hmm. And that's both major sides.
Yeah.
So it's not just Republicans or Democrats. That's those groups and a lot of others,
right?
Not just the crazies either. So that is a severe problem. Also, the sense that the judicial system is broken. That is, that's just more dry forest, mm-hmm. adding more timber to it. Mm-hmm. This is all, the rule of law was a huge thing in both Iraq and Afghanistan. Let's go to Afghanistan. Rule of law. Most of the people that I was out with, I was there for 2 years. I was 1 year with the military and 1 year just running around alone out in Afghanistan. The villagers wanted rule of law. They didn't like the Taliban, but the Taliban they saw as quick justice, mm-hmm. and they were not corrupt. they would make a quick judgment, and it would be according to tribal law, and it might not be what they like, but it would be quick, and they didn't have to wait a year or two, and they didn't have to pay off every government employee and whatnot. Likewise, we saw similar in Iraq. Many Iraqis would say, oh, we hated Saddam, but at least we knew the rules.
It
right?
might have been brutal, but he was brutal to everybody, and so it was fair.
He was an equal opportunity tyrant. He was clearly that, and they actually respected that.
Yeah.
And now we see in the...
Wars.
Yeah. And now in the United States, we see increasing numbers of people from all sides see the government as and the judicial system as broken and or corrupt, right? And so this is a problem.
Yeah, because if you feel like I have no recourse through legal methods to change things, to fix things, whether it's by voting, you know, at the ballot box, you know, or trying to change things in my local politics or anything like that, if I don't have any recourse, then I'm left with voting another way, which is either voting with my feet or voting with a rifle. And if I don't feel like I'm able to vote with my feet, that doesn't leave me any options. And I think we're seeing people start to get to this point in the United States. And man, it is ripe for a spark, without a doubt.
Human osmotic pressure within the United States. For instance, Elon Musk says, I'm going to leave California and go off to Texas. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've been in California quite a lot. I was just there again, north to south or south to north. Mm-hmm. And boy, I'd leave. You know, the first time I was in California, I went to Defense Languages Institute there for German. And ich spreche Deutsch, ich kann das immer noch machen. You know, I went there. I was in San Francisco, the DLI campus in San Francisco, not the
Presidio.
One in Monterey, at the Presidio. Yeah, there was one in Monterey and one in San Francisco. And San Francisco was a nice town then. It was quite nice. I loved California then. Now when I go back, I'm like, who would live here?
It's a toilet.
It should be the best place to live on the entire planet.
Yeah, it's horrible.
And now it's like the less, I would never buy a home in California.
There's
this
no
point.
Way. There's no way.
Yeah.
And you'd pay $700,000 for a porta potty.
Yeah. And not have any rights. I mean, you don't have the right to defend yourself.
Right.
I mean, these are basic human rights to defend. You know, we see in states now when people start burning the cities down, the media is just playing, oh, it's just a little protest. No, people are losing their homes, businesses. They're getting raped. They're losing their lives. They're covering it all up. But we see it. It's not hidden. We have, all of us have friends and relatives and old army buddies everywhere. We see what's happening. We got the pulse. We don't need CNN to tell us what's going on. We've got our own network. We can see what's happening. And so the pressures, the forest is drying in the United States. And I'm American. I love my country. My mother's side came in 1609, right? So, I mean, we go way on back, like, you know, Forrest Gump fought in all the wars type things, right? And so I don't want to see this happen to my country. But I look at it like a doctor. If a doctor sees that you have cancer, is he going to just lie to you and say, well, I know you don't want to hear you have cancer, so you have a cold? No, it's cancer. We are clearly marching into a civil war. And if we don't do something about it, once that lid comes off, you've been in war.
Yeah, you don't want to be there. Let me tell you, there's no soldier that's ever experienced combat that would like to do it again. I mean, unless he's a psychopath. But the end result of this, I think personally, what we're going to see is the balkanization of the United States. We're going to continue to separate into our tribes, you know, left, right, conservative, not, whatever. And the problem is that's going to require two separate, basically what we're seeing is two separate countries living in the same place that cannot mix. They hold mutually exclusive worldviews, and so they can't be together. They can't spend, you know, be in proximity to each other, because if I want to take my kid to the library to get a book, there's going to be some dude there in a mini skirt reading to the children, and I'm going to have to explain to my little boy what the heck that transvestite is doing there, and I can't live in a country like that. I'm not going to do that. And so we're going to have separate places to go. You know, it's pretty ironic to me that the party that is so big on inclusion and acceptance is the one that is the least inclusive and accepting and the most immune to irony. You've seen the same thing with Antifa.
Yeah.
Right? Tell me about your experience with them.
Well, Antifa, I mean, there's different sorts of Antifa. I've been out with them in Portland quite a lot. at like midnight, dressed like a homeless guy. I'm just kind of staggering around out there. And at one point, they're out there with the police line. I don't drink, so it's not like staggered. But I'm at, and so, you know, I'm walking up to a police line, and one of the Antifa guys says, even as fat as I am, they're like, they're not going to let the, they don't let the homeless, they don't let the homeless people go through the line or something.
I go
like
out there and they go, this guy's a cop.
Yeah, yeah, they start beating you. You know. But my hair was, I hadn't shaved in a long time. But now I just shaved the other day. But so they're like, they're not going to let the homeless through there, buddy. And I was like, thanks. Thanks, bro. You know, and so I'm just out there listening to them talk. But so you've got different types of Antifa. You've got they've got, for instance, a kitchen. I don't know if they've taken it down recently, but yeah, I was there with Misako.
Riot ribs and all
right,
that.
Yeah, and there's an actual near the Red House. They have a kitchen. We went up there and we're actually having their coffee with them. Actually, they were just like, okay, we just did the audacity thing, like walked in like we're supposed to be here, and they're just like, okay. And but so that's the purple haired Antifa. Then you've got more like the A team,
guys.
Yeah, and that are more serious. They travel around the country, they get on the airplane and go do stuff, right?
See, now, that's the thing I think people don't get is that these guys are funded. I mean, they got money. They're traveling to these things. This is not an organic thing that's just, you know, grassroots growing up in Portland, Seattle, and elsewhere around the country. This is something that's being orchestrated, and you've seen it. You've seen these hotels full of these guys.
Right. If you know what you're looking for in these sorts of conflicts, it's easy to start picking out what we call the GF, the guerrilla force, from the what we call the aux or auxiliary versus support, right? Now, this is like going into the jungle and going, okay, here's a monkey, here's a python, here's a crocodile. So, but once you have done this enough, I can walk in and say, these are auxiliary. They're local people. Mm-hmm. They will fight. Like, for instance, in Afghanistan, most of the Taliban, we called them little T Taliban. That's your local Taliban. Big T were your GF. That's your guerrilla force that trains in Pakistan. Mm-hmm. They wear good shoes. They have better weapons. They have units that travel around and fight in different. That's big T, right? All these organizations all around the world through many generations have that same sort of morphology. You'll have that one part of the pie chart, that 1% or so, that's your GF, that's your full-time fighters, that can grow over time, that GF part of the pie chart can grow. But the auxiliary, the little T Taliban, or the little T, or the little A Antifa, those are the local ones. Those are the ones who fight when you come to their neighborhood. They won't travel beyond one tank of gas to go fight, right? Then you've got the support. Support doesn't fight. Support provides usually money, intelligence, medical, advertisement.
Hide them, right. Yeah, you know, we see the same, a lot of similarities between insurgency in Afghanistan and between Antifa. And I've been out there too, and I've seen, just like you say, they have those Ewoks that are the medics that they raise money and they go out there and they support Antifa. They don't actually go up on the front line with a shield and start throwing Molotov cocktails. When the guys try to throw one and hit each other and get burned, the Ewoks are the guys that go in and fix them up. They have the people that you know, stand out there and sing Kumbaya before the riot that end up acting kind of as human shields. Like I saw the Wall of Moms when they were attacking the courthouse there in Portland, where these moms would come. They'd all dress the same, and these were the same women that the night before were dressed in black and throwing Molotov cocktails. The next night, they dressed up as, you know, with flowers and yellow shirts and helmets, and they went out there and they stood in front of the fence and yelled for them to take down the fence, you know, whatever. And while they were doing that, Antifa, the black bloc guys back behind them, started lobbing rocks and bottles and stuff over them so that when the federal officers came out and started shooting back, they shot the Wall of Moms. And how dare they, these peaceful moms that were just there protesting injustice and whatever, are getting shot with pepper balls. Now, never mind that the night before they were the ones that were lobbing the fireballs, but this is that very intentional tactics and strategy that they employ. They block off roads, they have road guards, they have people with radios, they're communicating. This is a much more than just a bunch of teenagers out LARPing.
Right. This is all part of the information game. Oh, yeah, it's very dangerous. It's all part of the information game. These wars always have a huge information component. The better you are at information warfare, I mean, that's a force multiplier like nothing else. I mean, if you have a great CCP, Chinese Communist Party, has the greatest information warfare infrastructure probably in the history of humankind.
I saw today they were using Black Lives Matter against us. So I really appreciate you coming and spending time with me, and it's been a real joy and pleasure to do that. We are going to travel together some more. We've got trips to Armenia coming up in May, and who knows what we'll do after that, but I'm sure there'll be a lot more, conflict to report. One of the good things about being a war correspondent is that it's the job security, because there's always
Being a meteorologist almost. There will always be weather tomorrow.
That's right.
Unfortunately.
Well, thank you again. Appreciate you hanging out with me. Go look up Michael Yon, patreon.com. Is there another link? Just Michael Yon?
Yeah, just patreon.com. And from there, you can see other links like to Twitter and that sort of thing.
It's the best way to do it. You should like and you definitely should support this kind of journalism, because it's the only place you're going to get the unvarnished truth. So thanks for watching. I'm Chuck Holt.
The Hot Zone is produced by Amy Holton and Livefire Media.
Copyright 2021.